on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How are you? We're back for another episode of the YokeCast podcast, and we've got some great conversations coming up in the YokeCast podcast here this week. It was great to get the football season underway, especially at home. The crowd was electric. Those who attend, thank you so much for coming. It is phenomenal. We may not fill every seat in that building every single time, but I'm telling you, the people who are there are active, and you definitely make a difference. So keep showing up to Coyote football games. We got another one coming up next week against Eastern Washington. It'll be another important game to get to the Dome and support the Yotes. Coyote volleyball opens up at home this week. They've got three matches in the South Dakota Classic, a classic in which they've done exceptionally well at since its inception. And we hope that they continue to do well. And then, of course, Coyote soccer playing at home a couple of times this week. So we'll get into all those details coming up later at the end of the podcast as well. Cross-country teams were both picked number 4 in the preseason polls. We'll see how they can do. Both teams return a lot of their runners from the conference meet a year ago. So hopefully they can continue to build in the right direction. South Dakota got a win on Saturday over Central Connecticut to kick off the football season, and obviously a lot of the highlights went around the quarterback, Austin Majeski, who was named the National Freshman of the Week by Stats Perform. He was named the Missouri Valley Football Conference Freshman of the Week and Offensive Player of the Week, and just so many accolades. You know, game number one, he throws 6 touchdown passes, which ties a USD record for most touchdown passes in a single game. So he obviously helped this team, but you'll hear in this conversation, I mean, he gives credit to a lot of other people on their effort. He said, "They make me look good, but it's their effort that's getting it done," and that's just who Austin Majeski is. So we're going to chat with him. We're also going to talk to Chris Bolin. He's an analyst for the Northern Colorado radio broadcast, and John Schemmel, the athletic director at the University of South Dakota. Let's get it started with the freshman quarterback. Let's get it started with the redshirt freshman quarterback who made his collegiate debut on Saturday, accounting for 7 touchdowns, helping South Dakota to win over Central Connecticut State. That's Austin Majeski.
Austin, you get that first game under your belt. It's been a couple of years since you've been on a game field, game situation. How did it feel to get back out there and just play the game that you've played for so long?
It felt so nice. I mean, actually getting back in there, it's not like a practice setting. You know, you actually got guys coming at you, trying to hit you and all that. I mean, it feels good again. Like, I know that may sound weird. Like, you know, it feels good getting hit again. But after, you know, like a year and a half of my last hit I really took, it felt good to get back in there and actually play football and not just like, you know, people just tagging off right before they get to me and never knowing like what would the result of the play actually be. So it was nice getting back in there and, you know, letting it fly a little bit.
The first drive of the ball game, I think everybody knew the first play was probably going to be a handoff to Charles. You know, you're making your first start in a college uniform, and then your first pass a little bit underthrown, and then you completed one. I know it was 3 and out, but what'd you take from that opening drive and just get to the sideline and get settled down? I'm sure there was a lot of emotion at the start of it.
Definitely a lot of like nerves and all that rolling around, but like after the first drive, you know, we completed the ball on 3rd down. We went back to the sideline and we talked as like a unit and all that, and we realized like, you know, they're doing everything we thought they were going to do. I mean, they're showing all the looks we saw in film. Everything in our playbook is up and running right now. So, you know, after leaving that first drive, I know it wasn't the best of drives, but we left with confidence knowing that, like, you know, everything's up and running, everything will be working, like, you know, we're getting the looks we want. So, you know, even though it wasn't the best drive, we definitely left with confidence.
You get back out there and you just get in a rhythm and start making big plays, and there were a lot of explosives in this game. Obviously completing passes is important. How important was it to distribute the football the way you did to a couple of different tight ends, multiple receivers? I mean, it feels like there's a lot of weapons on this group.
I mean, exactly what you just said. There's weapons all around. I mean, it's not really like I never try to distribute it or anything like that. It's just like, you know, I'm going through my reads and everything. If you're open, I'm taking it. If you're not, then I'm moving on. But, you know, with the amount of weapons we have, it's just everyone's getting, like, sharing the love because, you know, they're either the first in the read progression there or second there, you know, they did their job. But, you know, just getting into the whole flow and like rhythm of everything with guys all around. I mean, you know, it's just you just take what you want, pick your poison. I mean, they're making me look good, but you know, yeah.
I think you did enough to make yourself look good. You're talking about read progressions. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes when fans watch a game, and you've probably done this watching a game, like, how did the quarterback not see this guy? How quick does this stuff have to happen as you kind of search around the field looking for a place to throw it?
Oh, it is so much faster, especially compared to high school. I mean, you're getting your 1 to 2 to 3 so much faster. And then on top of that, like our coaches, they make sure we're getting our eyes in the right spot and all that. So we're making sure we're looking at the right guy. And in order to do that, or like when we do that, it allows us to get through our progressions faster. So, you know, they give us our tips to help us out with it a lot, but in no way, shape, or form is it easy. And then to build off what you said earlier about, like, you know, how people watch and, like, they're like, oh, why didn't he throw this? I mean, half the time, like, you'll watch film, like, after a game, and a guy who's on a route who's really just a clear-out route, you know, he's just over there to push the defenders away from our real concept. Sometimes they just pop open, like, wide open. And then, you know, after the game, post-wise, we'll have to, like, go back in the film room and, like, okay, do we now need to highlight this route? Because, like, you know, against this defense, there's a chance it pops wide open now, so... You know, it's always just like analyzing what you did play before and all that, and then seeing how you can change it so it can be better in the future.
68-yard touchdown run in your first college football game. You set some expectations for yourself. How did it feel to get down there running down the field? And did you know at a decent point that you were going to score, or what was going through your mind on that run?
After I seen the open alley, you know, I was pretty convinced I was going to score. Then after I saw that field safety, I was like, okay, maybe not so much, but you know, we were able to make it to the end zone. But no, it felt good for sure. I mean, the amount of training our entire team has put on during the off season, the way Coach Vargas has been, you know, working us and everything, it was nice to be able to put some of that training into work, you know, get show my speed off a little bit and everything. So
you put a lot on tape, no doubt about it, including 6 touchdown passes, which tied a USD single game record for pass touchdowns. And I can't imagine you went through the record books and started circling the things that you wanted to chase down, but I'm sure at some point somebody told you about that record. What'd that mean to just tie something like that and have that kind of performance in game one?
I actually didn't even find out till after the game. One of my friends, Beezy, Jaden Brown on our team, he told me after the game, and I was like, that is wild. But, you know, it feels real good being able to put on that performance. I mean, I know it shows in my stat book and all that, like it shows up under my name, but I think as a whole USD roster and as a team, like this weekend that like I put on, we should share it as a whole offense just because, you know, I mean, if you look at Keandre, he took a 5-yard slant. He took it for 60 yards. I look good in the record books because of that now. But, you know, it's a whole bunch of plays. Braden White being able to stay up on the out route, score another touchdown there. I mean, that looks good on my part. But that's really just him playing with relentless effort, you know, to get to the end zone. I mean, as a whole offense, I believe my stats were reflective of just us doing our job and doing our responsibilities.
You know, it took a lot of years to build up to this point for you to get this opportunity in college. What do you remember about your first opportunity with the game of football? How to come into your life, you become a football player, things like that. Youth football, I mean, I know you were a star in that as well.
So I started in first grade, 11 on 11, which apparently is really early. I didn't really realize that at the time, but I was always into football. I mean, my dad got me into it and everything. We would always watch the Packers. That's my team. You know, I just learned to love it after a while. And then when I was growing up, I always wanted to be a running back. And I was like, oh, they look so cool. They always get the ball. They get to run with it. Very first practice, we didn't have a quarterback. So I switched over to quarterback, just started throwing around, realizing, like, I wasn't too bad at throwing. So then just stuck with it ever since. And, you know, I think it's worked out pretty well for me. I'm happy with, you know, being a quarterback.
Obviously, it's worked out well for you, a 2-time Colorado Player of the Year in high school. You're going through high school thinking about college. Did you always think you were going to play college football as you're going through high school, or at what point did this become real for you that this could be your next step?
In high school, I always wanted to play college. Like, you know, it's been my dream since I was little to play in the NFL. So I've always been chasing and trying to achieve that dream. But there was a point in high school where things did get like a little depressing, I would say, just because, like, you know, I'm putting up my stats and all that. We're doing really good as a team. We're putting up the records, and like nothing was falling through for me, like no offers, no nothing. Kentucky finally fell through, but then their coach left to go be the head coach with the Jags. So then that offer fell through, and then I didn't really have anything to fall back on. So I was at a dark spot where, like, am I even going to be able to play college ball? But South Dakota offered me, and then I immediately committed because I'm like, you know, they invested their trust into me. I want to be able to do the same back, show them that, like, I respect them trusting me. And that was really when I was like, holy crap, I'm going to play college ball now. I'm going to the place they want me. And that felt really good.
What was last year like? Obviously, you always want to come in and you're a competitor, so you want to play, but you're behind a guy who's now in his third year as a starting quarterback and obviously had a great deal of success in Aiden Bauman. How did you use last year to build yourself up, and what did you get from Aiden Bauman to set you up for this year?
I mean, last year being able to sit, I know, like, you know, not a lot of guys like sitting, but that was huge for me. And just being able to learn underneath a guy like Aiden, and on top of Aiden, Nevin, he's been here a while. He's been in the game for a while. I mean, just being able to learn off those two, pick their brains, because, you know, those two are so intelligent about, like, defenses and everything like that. That just sitting back and like asking Nev or asking Aiden questions while they're getting their reps, just like, okay, what do you do when you see this? Or like, you know, how do you deal with this? How, like, what made you flip that protection there? And stuff like that. They really helped me out, just like bringing me up to college speed really quick. So full shout out to those two guys for sure.
Then you get into camp this year and you're battling Nevin and Jackson for the starting spot. What was that process like for you? I mean, there's a lot of outside noise. Who's going to be the quarterback for South Dakota? I'm sure you tried to tune some of that out, but it's impossible to avoid, right, with social media and everything. How'd you guys try to just block all that out and just play the game? And you knew whoever was going to get the opportunity was going to have earned it, and obviously by the end of camp it was you.
Yeah, for sure. You definitely can't block out all the noise, but at least from a quarterback standpoint, like in our room standpoint, all of our mindsets, I mean, even up to like right now, I mean, anyone can go into the game, and I fully believe that if Nev and Proc were to go into the game, they could fully do the job as well. Each and every day what we do is, like, you know, we're not hating on each other, we're not wishing on each other's downfall, wishing on each other throw picks, anything like that. We're just helping raise each other's standard and raise the level of the bar each and every day. So, you know, if I see something out there, I'll let the guys know. That way, you know, if they get another rep and they see the same look, you know, it could get fixed. They do the exact same thing for me if they see something. I mean, we're each trying to make each other better. That way, when we compete against each other, you know, we keep raising each other's level. And, you know, inevitably, whoever lands in the spot, you know, we're going to be in our best form because of the other guys.
How much freedom has Austin Majewski been given at the line of scrimmage as you look at the defense to get to a different play? Some of that can be difficult, but, you know, a lot of offensive coordinators, they put a big trust into that quarterback.
Oh, for sure. I mean, at least compared to high school, the freedom is crazy. I mean, we're responsible for making a whole bunch of checks, you know, identifying pressures, everything. So, you know, Coach Morrison trusting me with that role, being able to get our guys in the right look, it means a lot to me. So, yeah, the freedom is quite a bit, I will say that.
You got one game under your belt, and obviously there's a whole season ahead, and you know, the games are going to get more challenging as game plans get put in for your skill set and things like that. So you're going to continue to evolve. But the next game, back in your home state of Colorado, you get Northern Colorado this weekend. I know at the end of the day you just want to play football and win, but I would imagine kind of exciting to go back to the home state and get to play a game.
Oh, for sure. And then especially being able to play in front of my family again, because, you know, a lot of them can't make it out to South Dakota. But being back in Colorado and being able to play in front of family, friends, and all that, and then play against friends as well, I mean, I'm excited for it. It's going to be fun.
How much of those, you know, those friends that you had maybe from high school that you're going to see on the other side for Northern Colorado, you get a little trash talk going on throughout the week? How does that work?
I've been quiet for now. They haven't said anything as well. So, you know, I'm not going to be the one to initiate that. But, I'm sure on the field there probably will be a few things said back and forth, but, you know, that's just all fun in football.
Yeah, no doubt about it. What did this mean to you on Saturday to get the chance to roll out there, you know, in a uniform? And you talked about, you know, at one point you didn't know if you were going to have a college offer, and then here comes South Dakota, and you probably hadn't even thought about South Dakota prior to that. But now you're here, and you're the guy. You're the starting quarterback. What did that mean to you when you walked out of that field and just to get out in that dome with that crowd on Saturday and get to realize that college dream?
I mean, it meant the world to me. And even more than the dream-wise, just being able to walk out there and know that every single guy out there, including coaches, have my back. They trust me to do the job out there. And, you know, I fully trust them to do the job. Like, that meant everything to me. Being able to finally get on the college football field, first start, and everyone's has full belief in me to do the job and everything, you know, it felt great. They really did.
We're excited for you. Excited to see what happens throughout the course of the season. Thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck this year.
I appreciate you as well for coming up.
That is Austin Majeski. He, of course, is the quarterback for the University of South Dakota as the Coyotes get ready to take on the Bears from Northern Colorado. Speaking of the Bears, they had a heartbreaking loss last week. Had an extra point blocked with 3 seconds to go. They lose by 1, 30-29. They open with 4 of 5 games at home, including back-to-back home starts for Northern Colorado, a team that last year came to the Dome, gave South Dakota everything it could handle. Coyotes had a goal line stand to force overtime. South Dakota eventually beat the Bears in that overtime, 24-17. Now South Dakota returns the trip to Northern Colorado and Greeley, Colorado, had a chance to catch up with Chris Boland to talk about the Bears. He's the analyst for the Bears Radio. Chris, it was a tough game one for the Bears. Heartbreaking loss. Obviously, multiple things led to it, but what people saw was the blocked extra point that didn't allow the overtime. How has this team rebounded from that? It's got to be frustrating knowing that that season-opening victory was right there for the taking.
Yeah, you know, I think if nothing else, this team is experienced in bouncing back from losses like this. You saw it firsthand last year in the Dakota Dome. That probably may not even be in the top three toughest losses over the past couple seasons. So I think if any team's kind of built to bounce back from a heartbreaker like this, it's UNC. And it's just for some of the older guys especially, I worry about, you know, having 5 or 6 of these just absolute heartbreaking losses over their career. If they don't, you know, start to believe maybe we're just snake bitten a little bit as a program. But from everything I've heard, they seem to be kind of focused on the right things, you know, one game at a time. The next one's the most important one, all the cliches you hear, but I think they're cliches for a reason.
You know, that last week there was a lot of hype, new lights at the stadium, first ever night game, the black jerseys came out. Northern Colorado is playing almost all of its home games at night. Is that by design to hopefully increase attendance, or is it just celebrating those lights all season long?
I think it's both, honestly. The big thing that Coach Ed Lamb has said about bringing the lights in is to build that community engagement. You know, a lot of youth football players have games on Saturdays. He's mentioned coaches' families haven't been able to come to some of the games in the past. So I think it's a little bit twofold. The reason behind getting the lights, obviously, just atmosphere, kind of build, make it a sense of legitimacy, but also really try to drive some more attendance. And an athletics administrator told me over the summer when they released kind of the schedule of home games is we have lights now, we plan on using them. So I think a little bit of both in that regard.
Talk about Ed Lamb. He's obviously been there for a couple of seasons. He was a winner at Southern Utah, took this job at Northern Colorado, and I know it's been tough the last couple of years for the Bears, but what's the feeling on Coach Ed Lamb and the trajectory of the program? If anybody pays attention, he's bringing in a lot of Colorado natives that are transferring in from other schools, really trying to make it local.
Yeah, and that's personally big fan of Ed Lamb. He seems like the exact type of guy that needs to be in charge at UNC. Like you said, done it at Southern Utah, which back at the time when he took over, Southern Utah may have been in a tougher financial spot with some more hurdles to overcome than even UNC has right now. But like you mentioned, ton of Colorado kids, well over half the roster at this point. High school, done it primarily. You see guys like Matthias Price. The whole O-line basically has been built out of high school recruiting. A bunch of those guys starting in their third, fourth seasons now as upperclassmen. And some of the transfers in too. Marcus Moser was the leading receiver in that game against Weber State. Went to San Diego State for a year, came back, originally a Fort Collins kid just down the road. Garrett Harstad, a Kansas State receiver, who originally from Loveland, another 20-minute drive down the street. And I think to win at a place like UNC, you have to do it a little different. I don't think going in and trying to compete with the Montana States of the world in the transfer portal is really a viable option when you don't really have the pockets to do so. So I think not only is it kind of a responsible way to build, but also going back to your last question, I think it does kind of build that community aspect. Blake Weslin, a DN, mentioned he had a dozen family members at the game Friday against Weber State. You know, when it's just an hour drive up from Denver, it makes it a lot easier to get those families to the games every week.
Yeah, no doubt that increases attendance and gets people excited. Certainly what all of us are trying to do is get as local as possible and bring people in. Let's talk about this team. You mentioned Matthias Price, obviously had a great season opener, averaged 6 yards a carry. But with him and Kenny Luth, the quarterback, it feels like the offense runs through those guys. Kenny Luth looks like a real problem for a lot of defenses.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up because I think the feeling heading into last week is – we had no idea what to think about the quarterback position. Most of, I think, everybody outside of the program kind of expected Keegan Patterson, maybe a familiar name for you, spent a year or two over at Indiana State, to come in and win that job. So there's just a lot of doubt around what Kenny Luth could do, but I think myself and everyone I've talked to, he won him over in that first game. A lot of toughness, a lot of grit. I don't think anybody expected him to carry the ball, what was it, 16 times, nearly 100 yards on the ground. But big kid, like 6'4", 235. There was on that last drive a 4th and 5 where he was hit basically at the line of scrimmage and drug a couple guys about 5 yards to get that first down to set up what should have been the game-tying touchdown. But he also, I think, philosophy of the whole offensive coaching staff is – kind of don't mess it up more so than we're going to like let him kind of run and gun like we saw a bit last year. I think he did a great job just taking what the defense gave him. When you have a guy like Matthias Price who can put his shoulder down, fall forward for an extra couple yards on just about every carry, I think that helps a lot. And when this offense is kind of on script, I think it's very deadly. I don't know. It struggled a little bit when you face like the 2nd and 13, but then again, you know what offenses don't.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Spread the ball around a fair amount last week as well in game number one. You look at this team defensively, they got a couple of tackles for a loss. They had a sack last week. What does this defense look like for the Bears as we enter week two?
I think it's still a bit of a question mark, especially early in that game before Eric Brown went down with a finger injury, I believe. They were throwing it with some success, which personally scares me a bit, seeing what Majewski did last week for you guys. I think the idea is create havoc. I think there are going to be a lot of one-on-one matchups outside, and I think they trust their guys to be in those positions. And I think, you know, more so than maybe stopping every rush for 2 yards and setting up 2nd and 8, I think they're fine maybe looking at some 2nd and 3s, 2nd and 4s, if maybe on the 3rd one, it's 2nd and 13 and they got him in the backfield. So I think it's a lot of create chaos. Maybe saw one interception with Frankie Morales last week, try to throw some different looks at you and kind of, I think they trust the guys they have on both sides of the ball. I don't think they're trying to do too much. Just kind of line it up and play.
You know, after this week, the Bears head north to Wyoming, and then they get a couple more home games. How about that schedule? 4 out of 5 at home to start the year. I mean, that's designed well. It means there's road games coming up, no doubt about it, but designed well to try to get off to a fast start.
Yeah, and that Wyoming game is about an hour 15 bus ride too, so don't have to hop on a plane until heading to Missoula in early October. I was really, I think a lot of people were optimistic, maybe a 3-2, 4-1 start even. You know, it was never going to be easy, but I think well, Weber State was going to be one of those three or four for sure. So maybe regroup, but couple tough weeks coming up with South Dakota and then Wyoming. I'm not even so sure how much better Wyoming is than you guys, honestly. But then a D2 program coming to town, and then Utah Tech, who, you know, didn't have the best Big Sky opener, but I bet they'll be hungry too. So I think it's imperative to really snag one of these next two, and kind of get those next two and start with at least a winning record and try to kind of get yourself on a decent footing before those tougher games really get rolling.
Came down to a goal line stand last year to force overtime in the Dakota Dome. South Dakota eked out a win over Northern Colorado. Could be another fun one in Greeley on Saturday. Chris, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, John. Really appreciate it. Should be fun.
That is Chris Bowen. He is an analyst for Northern Colorado on the radio, and appreciate his time joining us to talk about the Northern Colorado Bears. I really think this team is building in the right direction under Ed Lamb, and I don't know if it's going to click this year. They're getting closer. You look up and down their roster, they've got a lot of Colorado kids that are transferring from other schools back into the state and to play for Northern Colorado. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Bears look like here in the next couple of seasons. Well, I had a chance to catch up with John Schemmel this week, the athletic director at the University of South Dakota. One of the big hot topics around the NCAA is eligibility. So we talked a lot about 5 for 5 and more with John Schemmel.
John, how about it? It's official now. Yeah. Athletics underway. The last time we talked, we were just getting into the swing of it, but we've had a football game. We had the atmosphere in here. Volleyball's gearing up for home matches. This is fun right now.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, even coming into Saturday, really the first ticketed home event that we've had. Volleyball had an exhibition. So it just, you know, it never feels real until it's real. And sure enough, Saturday was a great day. Attendance was up. The environment was great. The fans were great, and obviously the game was great. And now we're off and running. Right now it's second week of school. We're multiple soccer games in, multiple volleyball games in. You know, everything's off and running, and it's a exciting time of year for sure.
It talks to the growth of the program and USD athletics as a whole. But in the past, when there's been some questions about the football team or uncertainty, you know, people kind of trickle in as the season goes on. And it felt like there was, even a lot of people had some questions on what this team was going to look like. New head coach, new quarterback, new players everywhere. But it felt like the excitement was real in this building.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think hopefully people are starting to see it, and the message is starting to kind of hit home. I think when all is said and done, we're elevating the floor of the program, and the program doesn't live and die with one player, with one coach. And that's when you know you're taking steps as a program. And our fans and our donors are as much a part of that as anybody in the significance of that. And I think you see that when guys graduate, when legends move on like Aiden Bauman, it's not just next man up, but it's next man up and someone that can step into a role and be a leader and a player for us. And whether it's LJ or, you know, name whatever guy on defense that we've had, and obviously Aiden and his legendary career, or Bob to Travis and Trav to Vitz, you know, it's kind of next man up. And I think hopefully our fans are seeing that, and hopefully they were excited to see, you know, the game on Saturday. But, you know, I think even just where we're ranked in the preseason and preseason rankings don't mean a whole lot. You're just guessing, and I still look at it and think we lack respect nationally with where we get put. But I, you know, I think it's all part of it. I think our fans are getting excited about it, and I think that showed in the environment and obviously the result.
One of the big topics across college athletics, one of them we talked about a little bit the last time, is new eligibility rules. The NCAA is implementing this 5 for 5. I think people are still trying to figure out what exactly that means, how it works, and how it affects us.
Yeah, you know, and then it keeps getting more complicated. I'm sure we'll talk about the former pro stuff too, but you know, the 5 for 5 is a really good step for us. And the simplest way to look at it is basically every student athlete gets 5 years from the second they enroll on a campus, whether it's junior college, Division II, NAIA, Division I, or your 19th birthday. That clock starts and you get 5 years from that clock, and that's it. Doesn't matter if you play all 5 years as a starter, doesn't matter if you tear your knee 5 years in a row, you get 5 years to do it. There's a few religious and medical exemptions, pregnancy, missions and other things like that, but very limited. And that's consistent with what it's been in the past too. So compliance departments are breathing a little bit easier. Our compliance department, that's pretty much been 90% of their time is filing waivers and trying to get extra years for kids. And many times getting extra years for kids that aren't gonna use those years at USD. And so hopefully it'll bring some sanity to it. It's consistent across the board. And what I would say, John, everyone wants to keep saying, pointing at the NCAA with this, the membership voted this in. The board of directors, which is made up of athletic directors, administrators throughout the country, student athletes are on that board. And I don't remember the exact breakdown of the vote, but if it wasn't unanimous, it was very, very close. And I think everyone was very supportive of the concept overall. It's not perfect. It's far from it. But it's something that everyone can agree on. Everyone acknowledges we've got to get some kind of rules in place to regain some sanity and some control in all of this. And it doesn't matter if it's South Dakota or LSU or everywhere in between. And even now Division II has adopted the same rules. So there's consistency throughout the body, and the membership very much pushed this. And I think that's a good thing. Not that there aren't still some challenges and headaches that we're dealing with around it all. But that's really what it is. It's 5 years from when you walk on a campus or your 19th birthday, and that's it. And those have been agreed upon. And I tell people that might question it, we do age-based eligibility in everything we do, right? Youth sports are all age-based. We all agree that you can't be 25 and play high school basketball. So this is a way to kind of bring the things that we're used to from when we're growing up with into college, and you're keeping it then within a framework of being a student and the time you would go to college as a student, which I think universally we all want. And then it's new, so there's always that, and it was quickly implemented. But I think overall it's been a very, very good thing, and we'll get through this year and then it'll just be normal after that.
One of the wild things right now is some of these athletes, they had some NFL guys going through fall camp or camp with their training camp in the NFL asking to be cut so they could go back to college and get on rosters. And we had coaches actively recruiting, probably still are, quite honestly. The Big Ten and the SEC, I think they're the only two to this point, have come out and flat out said, look, it's our league policy. If they've entered a draft and haven't withdrawn before the draft, then they're not going to be eligible to play in our league. I would imagine other leagues are going to jump on board with that, but at some point we got to get universal on that deal, it feels like.
Well, and there's a court case this week in Baton Rouge. So this has really turned into a Lane Kiffin and LSU versus the world now. And Lane Kiffin has been a disruptor in our industry for a long time. He's not going to apologize to me. He doesn't care what John Schemmler or anyone at USD thinks. But really, this has become a Lane Kiffin thing. And universally, the big conferences, namely the SEC and the Big Ten, have come out and said, we're not doing this and we'll punish you if you try to do this. And basically then the state of Louisiana countered and said, it's illegal for you to punish our coach for allowing these kids to play. And so it's actually gotten to the point potentially where you might see a situation where the SEC might say, okay, then no one in our league is going to play LSU. And so this is all literally playing out in the next 48 hours. There's a court case in Baton Rouge on Thursday night of this week They have a game on Saturday. The entire body is behind the SEC and the Big Ten. Nobody wants this. And, you know, and I think really this is exactly why. Ultimately, there's acknowledgement through the membership that over the last several years, you have a state challenge this and a state challenge this. Well, now these universities in this one state are getting an advantage that nobody else gets. And so then a state tries to introduce their own legislation and their own laws. None of that is good. And that's challenged the NCAA's authority. Now it's challenging even conferences' authority. But when all is said and done, if every other school in a conference says, if you do that, we won't play you, you're out.
Yeah.
And that's pretty indefensible. And so, you know, we have to get back to a point of sanity where we all accept there has to be some semblance of fair play, some semblance of structure and rules. And of course, the natural argument to that is if you do that, then you're talking about employment. I disagree with that, but you know, and the people that want to push for employment, it's 90% at least of student athletes have no desire to be employees. So it isn't necessarily the student athletes that are chasing the employment aspect of this. Now there are some small groups that have and continue to, but they're definitely the minority. And so really, you know, and I've heard, we all hear the talk shows too, and we're all getting our information in real time, just as many of our fans are. I think if this turned into, and I think Lane Kiffin initially said, well, if we don't recruit these kids, everyone else is going to, and I know for a fact other schools are recruiting them. Well, then immediately after that, you have the SEC come out with their rule, the Big Yep. 10, Big 12, ACC all fall in line. Nobody's really worried about G6 rules or FCS rules because they know we're all going to fall in line with those schools, with those conferences. And we're not the ones chasing the NFL guys anyways, because these guys are all going to get paid high six and seven figure contracts to play, which we're not paying. So it's just a different group that's really involved. But when they all came out and said that, that quickly kind of took the argument Lane was trying to make away of, well, everyone else is doing it. Now it's literally just LSU, to our knowledge, right? Yep. Maybe there are a couple others that are just kind of waiting in the wings. And now, don't kid yourself, if LSU gets the green light to do this, you will probably see a few other schools come in and actively recruit some of these kids. But if LSU gets approval to do this and the SEC and the Big Ten hold, then the SEC, the next conversation is going to be, no one's playing LSU.
Yeah.
And if that happens, I don't know how LSU wins that fight. They can't. I mean, they can sue. But every membership and participation in any conference is voluntary. You are voluntarily agreeing to sign up and play for this league. And you're aligning with schools based on location, academics, whatever it is. And so it's good that there's uniformity in that. And so I hope, just like I think everyone in our membership, maybe outside of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, is hopeful that the SEC is successful in this. And hopefully we're not having former professional athletes. Because I think the can of worms that this would open, let's say this holds up, and all of a sudden these kids are let back in. Well, what about the kid next year that's a junior?
Yeah.
Or now you have 5 years, so I'm finishing my third or fourth year. I'm eligible for the draft. I go sign a professional contract, pick a number, and I go to camp. And shoot, I might be a second-round pick, but now I'm a backup, and I don't want to be a backup in the NFL. So I'm going to say, nope, I'm going to opt out, and here's my money back. I'm coming back to college and opening my recruitment. That's what this could lead to. And so, which is just a joke, right? I mean, that's just stupid. And I think everyone would agree with that. And so, you know, you get your shot in college, you make your decision to go pro, you sign a professional contract, you're a pro. And it really doesn't need to be much more complicated than that. I understand there's money involved, but now you have your 5 years. make your money in college. If you're good enough to go pro, go pro. If you're 25 and it didn't work out, you know, you got to be like the rest of us for the rest of your life, and that's not so bad either. But that's also why you go to college and get a degree, and that stuff still matters. You know, these student athletes are set up pretty well, and these student athletes are getting a hell of a lot more than any student athlete before them. We offer great experiences at South Dakota, certainly all the way up through schools in the SEC. We're very proud of the experiences that we offer. Certain student athletes can make a lot of money while doing this, and that's great. But no matter what, there's a time when the jersey has to come off, and whether that's when you're 17 or 22 or 30 or whatever it is, it ends for all of us at some point, and I think we've got to be a little more accepting of that and move on. So that's all going to flush in the next 48 hours. LSU has a game on Saturday, but I think it's an absolute joke that we're even here and talking about this. And I really hope that that the SEC is successful in their defense, and hopefully that'll be another step for us, you know, to kind of put the worms back in the can with all this madness over the last couple of years. And it sounds like it should be pretty simple, but of course it never is. So we'll see where it goes. But yeah, that's where it is right now.
So to be clear, we don't have any offers out to former NFL or NBA players or anything like that?
Not to my knowledge. They would that'd probably clean our rev share bucket if we had to. So nothing to my knowledge, but man, what a time to be alive, right? And who would ever thought we would be debating this ever in college athletics? And even when this stuff was out of control for a couple of years, I never thought we'd get here.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is crazy. So we'll see where it goes. I'm optimistic. And I think the good that we've seen over the last couple of years is you are starting to see alignment again, right? With the House settlement, you had alignment. With the eligibility, you have alignment. In this case, you have alignment with the exception of one school out of 370 Division I schools. So there's alignment there. That's usually a pretty powerful thing, and hopefully that'll hold in this case.
You know, I know the numbers aren't out there necessarily, but with the House settlement, you mentioned the rev share bucket. That kind of opened that door for us to have some options. Somebody asked me, they said, do all football players get paid? How do you go about that process and, you know, deciphering that whole rev share with the House settlement?
Yeah, I think there are schools and universities where the answer to that would be yes. I think you look at schools in the Big Ten, in those bigger conferences where, you know, they're certainly going beyond their caps. The cap is $21 million or something like that this year. And so all of those kids, it's, you know, we've redefined what a scholarship is many times throughout Division I athletics. That's really all this is again. It's just a much bigger bucket now. And so there are a lot of programs that would be. We are not. And I think the part of the rev share that people forget too is, you know, we've opted in to the House settlement, and now you're controlled by roster limits, not by scholarship limits. Mm-hmm. So every student athlete theoretically could be on a scholarship here, a full ride, right? There is no limit. Our limits are our budgets. I don't have another $10 million to hand out in scholarships, or we would do it. But in certain sports, and football is one of them, we've certainly been able to bring in more kids on scholarships now, whether that's full ride or partial. And that just depends on budget. And there's multiple sports where we've seen that. And I think that's a really good thing. That's more opportunities for kids to come in and get an education and do that, and be part of an elite program at USD. And I would imagine we'll continue to invest and grow in that. And that's part of the rev share category as well. But no, we're not, everyone here is not getting paid. We're certainly paying student athletes, and we're doing what we do to remain competitive. And But yeah, it's certainly not the majority of our student athletes of the 400 plus that we have here.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned, obviously, there's no roster limits anymore, I think.
No, there are. It's only roster limits, no scholarship limits.
Yeah, no scholarship limits. Sorry, thank you for the correction.
Yep.
So no scholarship limits. But with this 5 for 5, how has that adjusted what scholarships look like for our student athletes or just setting rosters in general for each sport?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's really set up in favor of the student athletes. Anytime we offer a kid a scholarship, we're guaranteed, right? We can't pull it because of performance, other things like that. And it's basically year to year for the student athletes right now. So when we offer to the kids, now you can set things up and say it's going to be 50% throughout 4 years. We're going to go full ride year one, nothing year two, you know, so you can do different things like that.
Sure.
But ultimately, if you offer a full ride, that's through the duration, unless there's, you know, an agreement that student athlete's going to transfer for whatever reason. And then that obligation isn't there on the other side of it.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, you know, every time there's a decision in the NCAA, there's somewhere a judge decides to get involved at the state level. I feel like that's always going to happen. Is there any way we can get to a point to avoid that stuff and get back to not necessarily just have, okay, the NCAA says it and it has to be matter of fact, it has to be the way, but it feels like every decision gets challenged and just drags all this out and just feels like it'd be easier if we could just set some rules and play by the rules.
Yeah, I think, so there's really two paths to that. There's federal legislation, so the Protect the College Sports Act or Save the College Sports Act, that will be revisited here in September, I believe, when the Senate is back in session. That would have to pass the Senate floor, then go to the congressional floor, which it would certainly be debated and all of that. And if I remember the process correctly, then it has to get approved on the congressional floor, then back to the Senate. Formally, so that isn't going to happen tomorrow, right? But that isn't the only path, I don't think. I think there's a lot of strength now in the conference argument. And if the conferences say, these are the rules, and we can punish you, and if you're not going to let us punish you, then you can't be part of this league, I think you're going to see every other conference fall in line with that. And of course, then naturally everyone would say, well, why don't we just do that then in the Summit League or the Missouri Valley Football Conference? Really simple. We're not going to be the first ones to do it because we don't set the market. So if we were the first ones to do it, now we're the only conference doing something that might restrict an ability to pay kids or do whatever it is. Now we're putting ourselves at a competitive disadvantage. So everything starts with the SEC and the Big Ten, everything. And they know that. And ultimately, if the membership keeps falling in line behind them, they're probably not in any super big hurry to separate. And I think if things the SEC and the Big Ten want to start doing, they start having people go against them, kind of around them and underneath them, I think that's when you're going to see them get the hell out of here, right? And so certainly the NCAA authority and powers have been challenged and limited recently. But if the conferences can hold and schools can all agree that we want these rules within this league and then leagues around that just kind of start mirroring it, which is not a hard thing to imagine, then I think we're in a great spot. And so it isn't only that federal legislation can bail this out. And I think that's why the next 48 hours, even if they win this lawsuit, right, even if this goes LSU's way or whatever it would be, even if that happens on Thursday, it doesn't mean the SEC can't punish them.
Sure.
Because the rest of the members in the SEC, the other 15 schools, can say, okay, we're not playing you. And then LSU is going to sue them. And then that's the case that would really matter. But I would imagine, I have to believe that LSU would have a really hard time winning that case. Because if this is a voluntary membership, I'm opting in to participate with this group and the other 15 schools are good with it and you're the outlier, then go be the outlier. But, you know, I think, so I think that'll get really interesting. And I do think there's reason to maybe get a little bit excited and optimistic, especially if the SEC holds here, that maybe this can start to be, okay, we can establish rules this way. Now we're going to start expanding that and kind of go down and out. Now, when it comes to the employment thing and that argument, that might need to be federally, I don't know. You know, I'm certainly not a lawyer. I have a family full of attorneys, but I'm far from it. And, you know, but I do think there's reason to be optimistic that, that the conferences can govern themselves. And I think for the most part, you would see uniformity throughout Division I membership because we would all look to the two biggest conferences. And I can assure you the Big Ten and the SEC are looking towards each other. And what are you going to do or not do? Because they don't want to lose an advantage to each other. But once they agree, then everyone else, I think, will fall in line. And I think that'd be a really good thing.
Man, a family full of attorneys and former and current ADs and stuff. That's got to be quite the group chat.
Yeah, it is.
During times like this.
It sure is. Yeah, it's I'm the dumb money guy that sales and fundraising, and they're the legal minds. So, but you know, hopefully this will work out. It does help a lot to have a brother and a father in this dealing with it, and what are they seeing from their perspectives? But. Man, it's crazy.
Well, I'm interested to see how it all plays out. I know you are as well, and really excited maybe in a month or two when things clear out a little bit more, maybe we can dissect this a little bit better and talk about it a little bit more. But it's a lot of things going on right now in college athletics. It's a wild time. I know we're excited to have USD Athletics back. And
no doubt.
We could talk about this a lot. I know we could do an hour on this type of stuff, but it's great to have that from your perspective because people have questions all over. I know you even have questions, but you've been able to learn a lot more, and I know fans have a lot of questions, so always appreciate that time and the conversation and just trying to sort it out and keep us all on the same page.
Yep, for sure. No, I appreciate it. Happy to do it, and as always, go Yotes.
That is John Schemmel. He is the athletic director at the University of South Dakota, joining us here on the Yotecast podcast to continue talking about eligibility, and as that stuff continues to lay out in front of us, we'll continue to have the conversations, discussions, all of it, and try to keep you aware and educated on everything that is going on with it. It's a confusing mess, and certainly appreciate John Schemmel trying to sort it out with us here on the Yotecast podcast. Before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what's going on with the Yotes this weekend. On Thursday night, women's soccer's at home against Idaho, 6 p.m. start time, and then at 7 o'clock, the volleyball team will host Utah Valley as part of the South Dakota Classic. Volleyball back in action on Friday night as they take on the Air Force Academy at 7 o'clock, and of course, cross country will run at the Augustana Twilight in Sioux Falls on Friday night as well. Saturday, the triathlon team will compete at the Southern Hills Collegiate Cup in Hot Springs, South Dakota. And then volleyball takes on Northern Iowa. 2 p.m. is the start time there in the South Dakota Classic. And football will play at Northern Colorado on Saturday night. 7 o'clock start time from Greeley. That's 7 Central time. We'll be on the air on the Coyote Sports Network at 6 o'clock Central time. Tune in for all of the action. Sunday afternoon, women's soccer will host Drake. It's senior day for the Yotes. 1 o'clock is the start time Sunday afternoon in Vermilion. And next week, golf gets underway. The men's and women's golf teams both underway on Tuesday, both in action. Women's golf will play in Fargo. Men's golf will be in Riverside, Iowa. As always, stay tuned to GoYotes.com for information on schedule changes, results, ticket information, all of it. It's available at GoYotes.com. That's it for us this week. I'm John Thayer. Have yourself a tremendous weekend. As always, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.